Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany. Coming up in Ghana, media representatives claim journalists have been attacked by opposition supporters aggrieved by the outcome of last week's elections.
Any attack against any journalist is an attack against all journalists in Ghana. Any attack against one journalist, it's an attack against press freedom.
And after 4 days, talks in Kampala between M23 rebels and the DRC government appear to be stalling. We sample public opinion in the host nation, Uganda.
I really value these talks, and nobody should minimize or undervalue the peace negotiation.
Those stories and more coming up in the next 25 minutes. Stay with us.
Top story.
We begin in Ghana. 3 days after results were declared in last week's elections, the opposition New Patriotic Party, the NPP, has finally announced that it will not accept the official outcome and will be contesting it in court. There have also been reports of attacks by NPP supporters on their political opponents from the National Democratic Congress. Our correspondent in Accra, Isaac Kaledzi, begins his report with these remarks from NPP leader Nana Akufo-Addo.
Before I speak about that, I want to express deepest gratitude to all of you here for the strong, responsible stance you have taken in this matter.
That's Nana Akufo-Addo, presidential candidate for the New Patriotic Party, the largest opposition party in Ghana. The NPP were declared losers after last Friday's polls, but Akufo-Addo is rejecting the results. According to official figures from the Electoral Commission, incumbent President John Mahama won the ballot with 50.7% of the vote. After meeting on Tuesday, the NPP's National Executive Committee indicated its decision to go to court to challenge the decision. Nana Akufo-Addo says that is the best solution and is confident the court will look into the matter and decide what action needs to be taken.
Let us remain united. We are not going to retreat from the stance that we have taken.
But what are the implications of the NPP heading to court to seek a ruling? That's the question I put to Ghanaian constitutional lawyer Abraham Amaleba.
First and foremost, they have every constitutional right to go to court to argue against the results that came out of the December 7th elections. If they cannot really prove or they don't have an evidence-based issue, then I do not see why they should go or head to court. I don't see that this will have any significant implication on our democracy.
Meanwhile, there are reports of attacks and reprisal attacks between supporters of the NPP and the ruling National Democratic Congress. Officials of the ruling NDC allege their followers are being attacked by the NPP supporters, allegations which have been confirmed by local police authorities. Even journalists attempting to cover party protest marches have not been spared. Many have been attacked by aggrieved NPP supporters as they cover these events. The Ghana Journalists Association has condemned the violence and called on security agencies to maintain order. Afol Money is the vice president of the association.
Any attack against any journalist is an attack against all journalists in Ghana. Any attack against one journalist is an attack against press freedom. So we urge the security forces to rally to the defense of journalists who are attacked in their line of duty.
Ordinary Ghanaians on the streets of Accra have also expressed concern and hope for an end to the disturbances.
Well, I don't think it's right. We beat ourselves. We are all one people, right?
All Ghanaians, we have to watch out. We are a peacekeeping country. We have to be one, you know. Let's see what the court will bring their judgment.
Civil society groups and religious organizations are hoping for a speedy resolution, but for now are appealing for calm and hoping the situation does not escalate further.
Isaac Kaledzi in Accra. Jake Obetsebe Lamte is the chairman of the NPP, Ghana's main opposition party. I put it to him that observers had already pronounced the election free and fair, despite some logistical challenges. So why then was his party challenging the results in court?
Because the result that was declared, according to the evidence that we have in recollection, did not actually reflect the vote as the voters voted it.
What evidence do you have that the ballot was rigged?
Yes, we've done a scan, a recollection of a number of the constituencies, and we have found enough evidence to persuade us that the ultimate numbers will be very different, to sufficiently different to what has been declared, that the Supreme Court will find that there was a pattern and that the numbers are large enough to affect the verdict, and so that they can order for the new numbers to be included, and then whatever comes out declared as the verdict for the first round.
Your party has asked the Electoral Commission for an audit of the results. How has the Commission responded to that request?
We have a law here that says that you may not vote unless you are biometrically verified. There's a little machine that verifies you by your fingerprint. And the law says without that, you cannot vote. So we've asked for an independent audit of those machines to see how many people were actually authorized by the machine to vote, and then compare that to the number of votes that the Electoral Commission declares as having been voted.
But if this election was fraudulent, why wasn't it detected by the election observers?
Because the election observers are not part of the addition at the collation centres. They observe what is going on, but they don't necessarily see everything that is added up and everything that is written down.
How much controversy is there within your party about this decision to take legal action? How divided is the party over this?
We decided that it was a decision that the party management should take. So we called a National Executive Committee meeting yesterday, and we put the matters to them for them to debate and then to advise what we should do. There was no dissension at all on the matter of going to court.
Some people would argue it would be in the interests of Ghana that your party concedes defeat. In that way, unnecessary friction would be avoided. What do you say to that?
I would say that would possibly be in the short-term interest, because you'll then be buying peace at the sake of your long-term interest, because it cannot be that you're having a democracy and then you're allowing an incumbent government to do the things that we believe were done. Because if that perpetuates, there will come a time when people will suddenly realize that their vote is irrelevant, that the ballot is meaningless. And so since you cannot change government by the ballot, the only way to change government will be by the bullet, and we'll be back to the dark ages, coup d'etats again, and we don't want that. We believe that we've helped to bring about a democratic republic. We're happy with the way that the democracy has been working, and we want to make safeguards that democracy. And also, we think that by going to court and establishing some of the things that did happen, if once we're able to show that evidence, we will also be able to bring to task the Electoral Commission, because the Electoral Commission, although mandated by the Constitution to organize elections, are not above the law. And if indeed this referee is giving some very bad decisions, then it's time that we expose the shortcomings of the referee so that we can correct those shortcomings and, again, strengthen the institutions that underpin our democracy.
Jake Obetsebe Lamte, chairman of Ghana's opposition New Patriotic Party. Now, the head of DW's English for Africa service, Daniel Peltz, has just returned from covering the elections in Ghana, and he joined me in the studio shortly before the programme started. That remark there by the opposition party chairman that observers didn't necessarily see everything that was going on, everything that was added up, and everything that was written down. I wanted to know how credible that assertion was.
Well, of course, it's true that observers do not see everything that is going on, but there were different delegations across the place who deployed observers to different regions of Ghana. So I think they got a very, very good impression of what is going on. They were also allowed to observe almost all stages of the process, including going to the collation centers. So I do believe they got a very, very comprehensive view. And also, they did not say all is well. I mean, they did record a number of irregularities and challenges in the process. However, what they all said is that the results of the elections were credible.
What was your overall impression of these elections?
Well, there were challenges in terms of that ballot papers or ballot boxes were sometimes brought late to the polling station. So polling actually opened late. Sometimes there were problems because the queues were very long and there wasn't enough police deployed to manage them. But overall, compared to many other elections that I've also seen in Africa, this election was organized very well and also went on, despite all the challenges that were there, in a relatively orderly manner.
Daniel Pels.
Africa Link, every weekday on Deutsche Welle.
Next to the Ugandan capital, Kampala, where talks between M23 rebels and government officials from the Democratic Republic of Congo appear to be stalling. 4 days after the talks started, the two sides have only met twice. They've traded accusations and counter-accusations. The rebels have lodged new demands, but there have been no substantive talks. What then are Ugandans making of this unpromising start to Congolese peace efforts in their country? Our correspondent in Kampala, Leila Ndinda, has been finding out.
Events in the eastern DRC have a direct impact on Uganda. Large numbers of Congolese flee the country when there is any form of unrest there. Since November last year, thousands of Congolese have fled to Uganda, prompting the Uganda government to open a new refugee camp this year because existing camps are unable to house any more refugees. In a bid to stop the amount of people fleeing fighting in the country, M23 rebels and representatives from the Democratic Republic of Congo have met twice to try and resolve their differences. They fall into the talks and no meeting was held, but Tra Bizimwa, M23 political wing spokesperson, told the press in Kampala that both parties will be resting today. So, do Ugandans think the ongoing negotiations are relevant?
On paper, they should be. It looks should be relevant. But the spirit behind it, so far since they started last Sunday, is there's bad blood between the two. And certainly it's the bad blood which is bringing them together. And there's evidence also that both parties, it was the heads of state summit of the region that prevailed on them. Otherwise, they would never sit down to themselves.
These talks are really relevant because this is one way of resolving conflict peacefully or amicably without shedding blood. I really value these talks and nobody should minimize or undervalue the peace negotiation.
It shouldn't continue here. It doesn't make any meaning.
M23, they have got their ambition. They just want to rule part of the Congo.
Judging by the two meetings that have taken place in the past 4 days, does Sam Tale, a Kampala resident, believe the talks will deliver the desired outcome of peace?
I'm not seeing any sign that these guys will really agree and get to implement. It will be another agreement reached and nothing is implemented. So it's more to do with the rest of the region prevailing over both parties to implement their sides of the agreement.
Congolese are renowned the world over for their love of traditional Lingala music. Now, some Ugandans are advising the president of Congo, Joseph Kabila, to buy guitars for all M23 rebels to enable them play music instead of firing bullets.
Leila Ndinda reporting from Kampala.
Behind the headlines.
Just recently, the president of Equatorial Guinea, Teodoro Obiang Nguema, paid a visit to neighbouring Cameroon in a bid to try and resolve a border dispute between the two countries. Equatorial Guinea is refusing to allow Cameroonians to set foot on its territory, but assurances were made after the visit that the free movement of goods and services would shortly be permitted. Our correspondent in Yaounde, Moki Edwin Kinseka, has been to the Cameroon-Equatorial Guinea border to discover if anything had changed in the meantime.
The town of Kiosi in Cameroon, which is the main access road to Equatorial Guinea, has become a near-permanent market for traders. For drivers transporting food items from Cameroon, this is the end of the road. Peter Ngoran is one of them.
I transport food items like maize, potatoes. They no longer allow us to cross. When we stop here at Kiosi, people from Equatorial Guinea come to take their food to their country.
Very few Cameroonians are allowed to cross to Equatorial Guinea, but Equatorial Guineans come to Cameroon. Fai Elvis is a Cameroonian trader. He told me the difficulties they go through to buy goods from the neighboring country.
Normally, I come here at Kiosi to buy wine and perfume because we are no longer allowed to go into Equatorial Guinea. So the traders from Equatorial Guinea, they bring the wine and perfume to Kiosi, then we buy to Cameroon.
I moved on to the border security checkpost to find out from Gon Blandin, an Equatorial Guinean immigration officer, why they were not allowing Cameroonians to travel freely to their country.
Ils ne sont pas autorisés à passer ici.
Pourquoi? Why?
Allez demander à Malabo.
Relations between Malabo, the capital of Equatorial Guinea, and Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé, went sour some 5 years ago after Cameroonians were accused of antisocial behavior and repeated acts of theft. At the time, a group of armed robbers, said to be Cameroonians, attacked banks in Malabo and disappeared into the neighboring waters of the Atlantic Ocean. Cameroonian journalist George Kelong, who specializes in interstate relations in Central Africa, told me that Cameroonians are to blame for the strained relations with their neighbors.
Many Cameroonians have duped Equatorial Guineans to the extent that the people prefer to deal with Nigerians. They say if you see a Cameroonian and a snake, you first of all kill the Cameroonian before the snake.
The population of Equatorial Guinea is about 90% made up of Fangs, a tribe that also spreads through Cameroon's southern region. I asked anthropologist Bingona Bingona, who coincidentally is from the area, what is tearing a people with a common origin apart.
The majority of the population of Equatorial Guinea are the same people we have in Cameroon called Beti Bulu Fang people. Exactly the same. We go there with a lot of projects. When finances are given, we will not execute, which is very bad.
Cameroon's president, Paul Biya, met recently with the president of Equatorial Guinea, Teodoro Obiang-Gemba Mbasogor, and the two men promised that the borders would be opened immediately and the free circulation of people and goods assured. That has not happened yet. George Kelong does not even see it happening now.
It will be very difficult for the situation to change because the customs officer who needs money on the highway, I don't see how the discussion between the heads of state will affect the work he or she is doing on the highway. If you don't want to face any problem on the way, you give 50,000 francs to the bus driver so that he settles, in quotes, the officers at every checkpoint.
As I drove out of Kiosi, there were no indications that anything was changing and the border between Cameroon and Equatorial Guinea may not be fully opened soon. That is another blow for the sub-regional integration that Central African leaders have been preaching.
Moki Edwin Kinseka reporting from Cameroon. South Africa's Deputy President Kgalema Motlanthe will challenge incumbent President Jacob Zuma for the leadership of the ruling African National Congress and the country. That was being reported by the AFP news agency on Wednesday evening. The ANC is gearing up for a week-long elective conference in Mangaung, as Sobri Govinda reports.
The 4,500 delegates who will be attending the conference are deeply divided into factions as to whether or not to retain President Jacob Zuma or elect Deputy President Kgalema Motlanthe as leader of the party. They are also undecided about whether to adopt policies that will allow for state intervention in the economy, especially in the mining industry, to overcome the acute unemployment spiraling poverty, and deep social and economic divisions between the haves and the have-nots. Bishop Joe Sioka is the president of the South African Council of Churches. He is deeply concerned about the current state of affairs of the ruling ANC as it proceeds towards the all-important elective conference.
Very concerned that Manga Wong may actually be a disaster in that it will maintain the status quo because people are not electing leaders of integrity but are looking at what benefits will come their way if they maintain who is there already.
Zuma finds himself in the same situation as his predecessor, Thabo Mbeki, who faced a backlash when he was deposed during the last elective conference 5 years ago in the town of Polokwane. Religious, business, civil society and non-government organizations claim there is a growing resentment against the current moral decay and corruption plaguing the ruling ANC. They want definite decisions to be taken at the conference against these anti-social developments. Zakhele Ndlovu is a political analyst based at the University of KwaZulu-Natal.
There are serious and fundamental economic and social equity things that have to be resolved now and that have to be resolved with a greater sense of urgency.
The CEO of Business Unity South Africa, Ms. Nomakebe Mokgweni, called for greater economic clarity so that the private sector could work with the government to overcome the unemployment and poverty problems facing the country.
We really hope that the conference of the ANC will look into that and we would emerge with powerful signals that government will work with the private sector in making sure that we really get our country back on track.
Bishop Sioka says the poor, underprivileged and marginalized are angry and they would like to see the ruling party elect leaders were able to take care of the people rather than themselves.
It's real. There is an upsurge of a new movement that is taking place. And we can only educate people to vote people into power who will serve them, not people that are serving themselves.
But the party secretary general, Gwede Mantashe, who supports Zuma's re-election, has rejected claims that the ANC is gripped by factionalism, moral decay and uncertainty.
We've pulled it together. It is more stable now. When people are contesting each other and fight for their preferences and views in the ANC, there is real organization.
It's predicted that Zuma will retain his position as he has already mustered the support of 6 of the 9 provinces. Whether this support will hold at the conference will be watched with keen interest by members of the ruling party and the people as a whole. Many people believe that while the re-election of Zuma may be in the interests of himself, his hangers-on and supporters, it may, however, not be in the greater good of the country.
So Brieke Ovender, who will be reporting from that ANC elective conference next week.
Opinion.
Let's return to the elections in Ghana. They were the 6th in the country since the adoption of a constitution in 1992, restoring multi-party politics to Ghana. Now, what do you think of these 2012 elections? Is Ghana a model for African democracy? Let us know your thoughts in an email to feedback.africa@dw.de or in a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. Before we leave you, a reminder of our main stories. 3 days after the elections in Ghana, there are reports of opposition supporters attacking their political opponents from the ruling NDC. We've also been hearing what Ugandans think of the Congolese peace talks that their nation is hosting and about the challenges facing the ANC as it prepares for a crucial conference next week. Remember, that email address for all your comments is feedback. feedback.africa@dw.de. Africa Link will be back again at the same time tomorrow. Do join us if you can. This is Mark Caldwell in Bonn.